Wait, hold on.
This is live from the table, recorded at the world famous Comedy Cellar, coming at you on Sirius XM 99 Raw Dog. And on the Laugh Button Podcast Network, we have with us Perry L. Ashenbrandt, coming with us via Zoom from Tel Aviv, Israel, or somewhere thereabout. I'm not sure if it's Tel
Correct.
Aviv or Bat Yam or some other place in that vicinity, but welcome, Perry L. Via Zoom.
Thank you.
Noam is not here. Why? He left us a rather ambiguous message saying something came up.
He saw the guest.
Now, for Noam to miss a podcast, that something need not be of great significance.
Well, if to he be misses, fair, he's not in town, correct? So he would have been zooming in.
Is he still in Maine? He wasn't here on last night for music night, or rather on Monday night for music night. I thought he was back by now. But in any case, if Alan Dershowitz were here, my suspicion is that he would have made it. But I can't say that for certain. He may be something important might have come up. We have with us also one just doesn't know with him. We also have with us Comedy Cellar regular. He's an actor and a podcaster and a comedian. Mike Cannon is his name.
Thanks for having me. Father, above all, father and
well,
husband.
Okay. we can get into that if you wish. And he's a relatively young guy in his early 30s or so, which by comedian standards to have a kid is, I think, pretty young. Anyway, he's also not only does he have kids, but he also has recently given birth to a special, a comedy special called Mike's Huge Mistake. It's a crowd work special.
That's right. Yeah. Out August 17th on my YouTube, youtube.com/Mike Cannon Comedy.
Crowd work, of course, is a term we use in the comedy business, meaning you talk to the crowd. That's probably evident, but I'm not sure what's evident and what's not anymore, because I've been doing this so long that I don't know. Like when years ago, somebody said to me, I got to do a spot, and I didn't know what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And spot is the term that we use for a set on stage.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what set meant either, by the way, at that time. So I try to keep in mind that people might not know the terms that we use, but crowd work is fairly self-explanatory. You talk to the crowd.
Yeah. On an edible. So this is crowd work specials. I think everybody knows what it is now because it's also the popularized form of posting stand up now on social media. It's like, it doesn't burn material. People like it. It's spur of the moment. It looks like a magic trick. So I think a lot of people are kind of familiar with that. But yeah, I took some edibles to set the special apart from all the other ones being released, about 150 milligrams, and then performed 1 hour of crowd work. No jokes, just going
1 hour. You all in one shot, or was it edited together?
All in one shot. So straight up the same show, one shot, 150 millis.
But
that is an insane amount of marijuana.
For some people it is, and for me it is, like, that's a lot for me, but other people are like, you're a pussy.
Well, I don't know what that with 100 and whatever that milligrammage that you stated, I'm not sure what that is. Yeah. But if Perry L says it's a lot, then I guess it's a lot.
No, it's not just like a lot. Like 20 milligram edibles is like, will fuck you up. Like 150 milligrams.
Well, but Mike is obviously an experienced marijuana user.
Yeah, for sure.
So that makes a difference. And the fact that he was able to get up and do an hour of stand-up says to me that it wasn't a crippling amount of marijuana.
No, but I think I'm always wondering, because it also, like, 150 is kind of a different measure.
Well, have you watched the special? Could have been drooling for an hour and you didn't know.
I was sleeping. I bought a beanbag chair just for the special, just in case I wanted to lay down and like relax.
And where did you do it? Here at the Comedy Cellar?
No, I did it at a New York Comedy Club on 24th Street. It's very small, very compact. It felt like a sleepover. You know, it was more like a fun hang where everybody was also high, which was fun.
Noam does not mind, by the way, not that you are concerned about this necessarily, but promoting other clubs. No, I'm so confident in the dominance of the Comedy Cellar that you are free to promote and talk up another comedy.
Totally club. Different part of town, too. They respect the comedy.
But club. Even if it weren't, the Comedy Cellar is so dominant.
Yeah.
That Noam really at this point is not too terribly concerned.
It's a juggernaut.
It is a juggernaut. But which is, as a comic, and I've said this before, sometimes we like to perform at other clubs. We feel less pressure. I think that's like, you know.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, here you really want to like, you want to show out because there's so many great comics. The shows are always packed. The audiences are like as big of comedy fans as I think you get in the city, because a lot of them are like tourist destinations. People want to try on comedy for the first time. Mm-hmm. They're in New York. They feel like it's something to do that's like geographically significant to the city. So in other clubs, it can get kind of muddled with people that have never experienced comedy before. And so it's a terrible experience. But here it's, I mean, everybody's here on purpose.
Where can we see the Mike's huge mistake?
So yeah, that's at youtube.com/Mike Cannon Comedy. Also, I released an hour special earlier this year in May called Mike White Privilege Homeless. And that's a full hour of curated material that I was.
Why do you call it White Privilege Homeless?
Because it's the tag of a joke that I really like. And it's also the it defined me for about 14 months. My family and I, we moved out of the city during the pandemic and we lived at my in-laws like giant ass house right outside of the city. And so we were basically homeless, but in a very
homeless way. In the best possible way.
Exactly. Yeah. However, I did take quite an ear beating on like QAnon stuff. So, you know, everything kind of comes with its benefits and cons, I suppose.
That it does.
You don't have anybody in your life like that? Nobody just absolutely unloads their conspiracies all over your place?
No, not really. They do, I mean, I have people that are, you know, anti-vax or global warming skeptics, not full-on QAnon people.
Yeah.
And I usually tell them, well, we can't talk about this, right? You know, we'll talk about anything else, but we're not going to talk about this.
I think I make just so much eye contact with people that anybody that like latches on is immediately in, like they just see that they have a target acquired. And I hosted a conspiracy theory podcast for 3 years. So I'm into it. I like it. I like the story and stuff like that. Obviously it's changed over time, but I no longer want to participate in the conversation, but people find me. They just know.
This hour special. I mean, you know, it's hard over an entire hour to do crowd work. And I had assumed when you told me you did a crowd work special that it was edited from various, but you said you did it all in one shot. Certainly the muse is not going to be there for an hour. I mean, there's going to be moments where it's like, or maybe not. Maybe you're on fire the whole hour.
Here's the thing. So I did not plan to do an hour. I went in there just like, maybe this will be a 20-minute thing. This will be a fun, like kind of short video, short special, easily digestible. I'll be on an edible. If it goes well, great. If I make a fool out of myself, that's also kind of comedy. So why not put it out? And then it was on 420. I promoted it. So it was my listeners and followers and stuff that showed up. They were also on edibles, and it was just a like really nice symbiotic wave that we rode together. So there are moments for sure where I hiccup and nearly fold in on myself and die. But there, for the most part, it's like a pretty, pretty nice wave.
Now, when you do crowd work, do you do the standard, where are you from? I'm from, you know, say Louisville. Oh, what do you do in Louisville?
Sure.
And you keep asking questions until something hits you.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's obviously that's the go-to. That's like the baseline of everything. But in this in particular, and I think that's what edibles helped make it, is that we got into some pretty weird areas pretty quickly. I mean, I found out, you know, if people were like pro or anti-dolphin, you know, I don't know. We're just discussing the fabric of reality.
Now, I know that America's very divided. I didn't know that dolphins were controversial.
That's right. But we had a woman scream out. She's very anti-dolphin. She would not pay any money to ride them at a resort. She thinks that's offensive. And
well, she might be anti-dolphins being used for entertainment.
You'd think, but she said she's anti
she just
the animal
like
dolphin.
Dolphins. Well, you know, people have said they rape. Is that?
That's right.
I don't know if this is true.
They also take psychedelics, or they have, but not they didn't choose to. But scientists were testing acid or LSD on dolphins since they're the closest brain to us.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Since Noam's not here, we would have discussed Trump's, you know, whatever's going on with him. They raided Mar-a-Lago. But
right.
I know so little about that. And Noam's not here. So I guess we'll pass on that. But I do want to.
You don't
want to
just speculate?
I really have no idea what's going on. I just assumed Noam was going to be here and that he would take us through it step by step. So that because I, you know, that's how I get a lot of my news from Noam. I just know that they raided his Mar-a-Lago. They said he took documents from the White House, which he's not authorized to do. And
Well, I guess they're authorized, and I don't know much beyond that, them, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I think there's just some law where you certain things you can't take out of the way. I mean, you probably take pens and towels, but not classified documents. Yeah, not that. So I don't know. Unless Periel, now Periel's been in Israel, so she's a little out of the loop. Are they still shooting over there, Periel?
No, there's a ceasefire, thank God. They called a ceasefire about 24 hours ago. So,
and you were there during the whole thing, though.
Yes, I was.
And one might conjure up some sort of theory as to why the fighting started just as Periel was arriving. But we'll leave that for listeners to speculate. But you were there during the thick of the rocket exchanges.
Correct. I was actually about to do a spot at a comedy club in Tel Aviv, and I was 10 minutes away from the club when, like, we got a bunch of phone calls because the alarms go off when missiles are coming toward the respective city. So I actually turned the car around and drove back to where I'm staying.
Do you have like a bomb shelter there?
There are bomb shelters in every house has a bomb shelter here. Every restaurant, every store, every building has a bomb shelter. And so when you hear the alarm, you're supposed to have, depending on where you are, if you're down south, closer to Gaza, you could have like 5 seconds. I mean, they were sleeping in the bomb shelters there for days. I'm a little bit further north. Tel Aviv is further north. So we had like a minute and a half to get into the bomb shelters once the missiles are coming.
You missed your show.
I missed the, most importantly, I didn't do my spot.
They gave you the light early.
Yeah. I mean, it was terrifying. Although, I'm doing the show on Friday, so that'll be fun again. Although the guy who does it, who was nice enough to invite me, told me that I should come anyway, because it's just a fact of life here. And if everybody turned around and went home, nobody would ever do anything.
Well, the good news is if, I mean, I don't know if it's good news, but I mean, you could get some interesting social media posts out of it. I mean, if a bomb goes off and you're on stage and
well, something... yeah, I mean hopefully...
it's all about the clicks.
Yeah, you just got to get a caption.
And
I mean, somebody... it's insane. It's really insane. It's like, it's true though, because people are just like continuing to eat their falafel. I was like under the table, just like terrified.
There's a robust English speaking comedy scene in Tel Aviv.
Well, you would know better than I would. You were just here on a tour.
I know, but you're there, and I'm asking a question to which I know the answer, but that's sometimes what we do in the podcasting business.
I didn't know that. It seems that there is a robust English-speaking comedy scene here. It seems that even the very famous Israeli comedians are very eager to do time in English. Much like perhaps you, Dan, are always eager to do time in French.
Actually, I stopped doing comedy in French because it made me sick to my stomach with anxiety. But I might do it. I might go to Montreal and record a set, because I haven't done it in a while. And I might do that. But
that would be great.
Yeah, you know, I've done it before, but it's been a few years, because truly I'm so anxious. I'm anxious before a set in English, so one can imagine.
Do you have to immerse yourself in the language for like a set amount of time before you do that?
I've sort of self-immersed to maintain my level of French. I've been maintaining it now for many years by reading in French, by watching TV. If there's a audio track in French for a Netflix movie like I watched Squid Games in French, for example. They had a French
audio.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I, as much as possible, and if I meet a French person and they're willing to talk to me in French, because oftentimes they're trying to practice their English, then I will do that. So I'm always, trying to maintain my level of French. It's not native level by any means.
You know what I'm going to do when I come back?
Nope.
I'm going to find a nice French girl who's cute, and then she's going to be psyched to chat with you.
Okay, fine. I won't, I won't protest that.
I'll bet you won't.
Is that your type? Would you, if you had your druthers,
it's just an added bonus. I mean, if they can speak French, why not? Like they say, it's just as easy to fall in love with a rich man as a poor man. It's just as easy to fall in love with a French speaker as a non-French speaker.
I don't know why that never occurred to me. You obviously need a French girlfriend.
Well, it's an added bonus.
I feel like that would keep
it's an added bonus to assuming that they wanted to speak to me in French, because like I said, I have a terrible problem with French people that want to speak English because they want to improve their English. So it becomes a sort of a battle. And at some point you have to say, look, I mean, you're nice and all, but if we're not going to speak French, then, you know, then we got to just go our separate ways here.
Only you could take the prospect of like having like a hot French girlfriend and like her not wanting to talk to you in French becomes like,
well, it's a big issue, as any language learner knows. And we're going to have a language learning expert on next week, I believe. And I look forward to that. And we're going to talk about all about language acquisition.
So then best case scenario is a woman that is from here that is also trying to keep up her French.
Now, if she's from here, that means she's not a native French speaker. And that doesn't do me a whole lot of good.
Yeah. Well, maybe from the, I don't know. Never mind. I just got myself dizzy.
No, we need somebody who doesn't speak English at all, ideally.
Yeah.
or who doesn't speak at all. Even
well, that doesn't do me any good in terms of my listening comprehension.
So I'll be doing, I mean, it's, I think the crowd ostensibly speaks some Hebrew too. So I'll be doing it part in English, part in Hebrew.
Wow. It's like Spanglish, but
well, then post it on social media, because that's all, that could be something interesting.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I get to have like a pretty interesting perspective.
But comics from other countries do think that English is the only language in which to do comedy. Like, you know, in France, there's like our friend Gad who came here. Mm-hmm. Remember him?
Yeah, yeah.
And he thought that, well, I'm a star in France, but unless I do comedy in English, I haven't really hit the pinnacle. So that's not uncommon. You're saying about Israeli comics that want to do comedy in English. It's perceived as the language of comedy.
Yeah. Well, we invented it, right?
Yeah, I believe that is something we invented. That and the musical comedy and the music, you know, the Broadway musical. Those are American inventions.
No kidding.
And Laffy Taffy.
Is that true?
I think so. I think we actually kind of, in like opera is a European art form, but I believe the musical, the Broadway musical style, I believe is an American thing.
I was talking about Laffy Taffy.
Oh, I just threw that in there. I'm assuming that sounds just sounds very American.
So, you know, that they have all sorts of edibles now that look exactly like Laffy Taffys or Tootsie Rolls or things of that nature.
Tootsie Rolls, I never got into. That's, to me, other than being brown, it has nothing to do with chocolate. And I don't know what the hell it is.
You don't think, oh man, I guess it's like, it's not exactly chocolate. It's,
I think, it was originally like a chocolate substitute during the war when they were rationing chocolate. I think so. I think I read that somewhere. Yeah. And you talk about, you know, a swing and a miss, and somehow that awful candy is still around.
Can I give you an underrated chocolate chewable candy? Rolos.
Oh, I like, I don't know that.
I feel like they're not properly rated. You never hear somebody bust out Rolos.
Yeah, you're right. And David Tell doesn't talk about it on stage. That's how you know it's underrated. Because that would be something that'd be right up his alley. How'd you like a Rolo? You know, it's just a word that he would, if were it more in the public consciousness, it would be a word that I would think he would use.
Maybe you should get him a pack of Rolos and you might spark.
But I just don't think he perceives it as sufficiently well known.
Well, it's our job.
Like Jolly Ranchers is something he very much discusses. That's a punchline of his in more than one joke.
Well, then it's our job to build the buzz of Rolos. And
I was at Monkeypox is something that I'm sure he's must have integrated into his act.
I assume.
Why don't we talk about that?
Talk about what, Monkeypox?
Yeah.
Well, before we get to Monkeypox, I don't have too much to say, but I do want to talk about something that was affected me more than I would have guessed. And I think that's true for a lot of people. That is the death of Olivia Newton-John, who...
R.I.P. Sandy.
Pardon?
I said R.I.P. Sandy.
Yes, Sandy Olson from the movie Grease. That is correct, yeah. Michael.
Sandra D.
No, not Sandra D. Sandra D.
She was Sandy. Sandra D. Look at me. I'm Sandra D.
I know, but that's because they were.
Was that
Sandra D is like somebody else, and they were like comparing her to Sandra D.
Sandra D was a virtuous woman who was a prude, and they were.
Yeah, I think so. Sandra D was like some 50s icon or something known for period. I'm not so sure about that, but
I've been misinforming people for years.
Well, that's okay. I mean, I'm sure you're misinforming people about other things too.
Yeah, a lot.
But Olivia Newton-John, age of 73, which if I were 20, I would have said, well, she had a good run. But being a bit north of 20, it seems almost young to me, to be honest with you. I think Noam's father was the same age, actually, when he died.
Yeah.
The cancer would not leave this poor woman alone.
30 years, right?
She got it in 1992.
Oh, my God.
And then I think she was in remission, and then it came back. And then I don't know if there was a remission or a partial remission. And then it came back again a couple of years ago and in a far more severe form, I think.
Yeah.
But and that's what ultimately got her. But I feel very saddened about it. I think I think it's affected people more than, like I said, I would have imagined, especially for a woman that really hasn't been really in the public eye for a long time. Greece was 1940.
Why are you so upset about this?
Well, I'm not just completely bereft. I mean, I mean, I'm functioning.
Right.
I find it very sad. Of all the celebrity deaths, and you know, whether it's Prince or Bowie or whoever we've had over the past, Neil Peart. I don't know. I'm just coming up with
Neil Peart.
Well, I'm just trying to, just came to mind, you know?
Yeah, I get it.
The celebrities that have died out of, you know, over the past few years. This one was the most upsetting.
Why?
Well, I think it's because of a few reasons. Number one, it's she just seemed like a really decent woman. And by all accounts and by all evidence, was just as nice as her character in the movie Grease.
Okay, I never saw the movie Grease, but I mean, that just seems like an insane thing to say.
Why is it insane? What's insane to say?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure David Bowie was really nice also.
I'm sure he was. And by all accounts, was a good man. But the sweetness of first of all, she's a woman. And I think that the natural protective instinct of a man,
yeah,
it takes hold.
I like to see him get picked off.
And well, once again, Mike's huge mistake available on YouTube. She just like there's something about a sweet woman, I think, that's going to tug the heartstrings a little bit more than David Bowie would. Not that the loss of David Bowie wasn't tragic and sad.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you why?
But she seems like a mommy. You know, she seems like
mommy. Yeah.
I don't know.
She, weirdly enough, she looks, my mother and her have very similar features. They kind of look alike.
Your mother, is that attractive?
My mom's a dime, dude. You'd love her. But yeah, they kind of look alike. And that threw me into an existential, you know, vortex of considering my mother's mortality. So that's more or less why I got really sad about it. I wasn't even sad about Olivia Newton-John. I was more sad about my mom, who kind of looks like her.
Well, perhaps I'm sad about just mortality in general, but
right. I have these are,
you know, when somebody dies and they're older than you, but like, it's not, they're not ridiculously old. That obviously reminds us all of the minefield that we're walking through in life, you know. And and also, yeah, Grease was a movie that, you know, was a big part of my childhood and a very, you know, iconic.
Right. So this literally has nothing to do with her.
Does it ever really? You know, somebody dies, it's always about you.
Yeah.
But I do feel a certain sympathy because she just seemed like a great lady, and because, as I said, this cancer just would not leave her alone for the past 30 years of her life. It was stalking her at every turn.
And, was it?
Well, it was there. It came back twice, and I assume it was, she probably had to get tested all the time. You know, even when she was in remission, it's part of your life and it's there. And, you know, I don't know this for sure.
I like this side of you, Dan. I like seeing how much of a soft spot you have for Olivia Newton-John.
This has nothing to do with Olivia Newton-John.
No, it has to do with Olivia Newton-John and other things as well.
Imagine if she spoke French, you'd be beside
you. Well, I don't know that she didn't speak French. She probably didn't, because Australians, like Americans, usually don't speak anything other than English, as per the joke in my act.
That is true. That's a good joke.
Thank you.
You're a good comedian, man.
Thank you. Nicole, do you have any thoughts about Olivia Newton-John? You're much younger than I am, but I don't know that you know Grease.
Yeah, I don't have like a deep personal connection to it. My mom was very obsessed with Grease, so it was my personal mission to never watch it. but yeah, I don't really feel a personal connection other than like the cancer. Like you mentioned, I've lost people to cancer, so it's really tough to hear she struggled for so long.
That's very sweet.
Thank you, Nicole. That was well put.
Do you know who would be my Olivia Newton-John? I think Kate Winslet. I think that would be my...
If she went,
because listen, I don't have an everyday love connection with Kate Winslet, mm-hmm. but she's somebody who has left an indelible impression in my life through one major movie, Titanic. Yeah. That's a big movie in my life. But then also, you know, several other things outside of that. And I feel like she is kept in my consciousness. So that would be a hurt. That would ruffle me, you know?
What has she done besides Titanic of note? I know she's done a lot of stuff.
Revolutionary Road made me and my girlfriend at the time, now wife, get into a near relationship ending fight on the sidewalk after seeing that movie. It is like the absolute perfect showcase for a dysfunctional couple, a couple that should not be together, and it will drive anybody to fight.
I didn't see the movie, so I can't.
It's good. Man, it really closes with a harsh homemade abortion too, but otherwise,
wow,
yeah, really good movie.
Well, maybe I'll have to check it out. is it available in French?
I believe so.
You know, when I on Netflix, I look at the audio track, and most movies are available in Spanish. A relatively small number are available in French, so it's nice to find. It is.
Why don't you? I mean, maybe you have. Maybe you're a. Maybe you're.
Because I can watch it in English as well.
But why don't you just watch French films?
Because they suck.
No, they don't.
Ugh, they're awful and boring.
What about Audrey Tautou or whatever?
And don't recommend Call My Agent either. I'm gonna throw something.
I don't know what that is.
That's a series in a French series. On Netflix that actually Todd Barry likes it. And a couple of people tell me how much they like it. I didn't really like it at all. I'm exaggerating in terms of my antipathy for it, but I don't really like it that much.
Do you know what it sounds like though? It sounds like there's a market open for a good French show. And it sounds like a writer of your standards could make that happen.
Well, maybe the French like the shows that they have. I just don't.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a market for people that are French, you know, speakers of French as a second language to practice. I'm not going to make a movie just for them.
Now, do you like, are you a big fan of France? I mean, have you spent a lot of time in Paris?
Yeah, I've spent time in Paris. Also, the Paris Hotel is where I did America's Got Talent. But aside from that, yes, I've been to Paris a few times. I don't love it. It smells weird.
No, it doesn't. It's not weird. Smell weird. Weird.
Isn't that weird? You did America's Got Talent in the Paris Hotel.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's actually interesting. I mean, that feels like the universe talking.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. But first of all, you live in a fucking cesspool of New York City. Paris.
Or maybe I'm just used to it. Paris is the architecture is beautiful. I don't love France. There's nothing. You know, people make that mistake all the time. They call me a Francophile, but I just think it's cool to speak a second language. And I had a
bad. Why did you pick French?
Because I have bad memories of Spanish because of Mrs. Cahill in high school, and
Mrs. Cahill, was that your Spanish teacher?
That was my junior year Spanish teacher.
And why do you have bad memories of her?
In high school, I didn't have any interest in foreign languages, and that interest came in later life. So I hated the class.
Okay.
Because I probably would have hated any class. I don't mean to dump on Mrs. Cahill. I just thought it was funny.
Well, she's probably with Olivia Newton-John.
she
was very young at that time. She was in her 20s, I think, at the time. So she was a young teacher. But Yeah. So, and I have some family connection to French because my parents are Montrealers. They're not French speakers, but they're born and raised in Montreal. So I do have some childhood memories of seeing signs in French. I mean, I don't know.
That's like being a Notre Dame fan because you're Irish. I get it.
You know, there was some connection. Now, so the question is, why didn't you take French in high school? Because everyone said Spanish was easier.
Right.
And it's not, by the way. I think it's probably harder. It's probably harder. And it's certainly no easier.
I also took French all through high school. So I'm with you.
You're saying
I took German.
That is harder than both Spanish, but
I know
by quite, I think quite a bit.
I cheated my entire way through it because I was an idiot where I, again, was faced with the same decision. What do you choose? And we had one of those, like in fifth grade, we had to choose what we would take from middle school. So they would present the languages and Spanish class did their presentation. French did their presentation. And then German, they had like three kids in the class. They're a failing, failing part of the educational thing. So they had to get some kids in. And so they took out like puppets. They did this entire show and I fell hook, line and sinker and immediately signed up. And I don't remember shit.
Yeah, it's much harder.
You can't speak German.
Very, very minimally. I can say wie geht's means like what's up or how are you. Es geht mir gut. That means I'm good. Spielst du Fußball means do you play soccer. Aua, meine Nasen tut mir weh. That means ow, my nose hurts.
Achtung, baby.
Yeah.
Which means attention, baby, I think.
That's right.
An Achtung, attention.
Probably.
Schutzstaffel.
What's that? Short.
That's
stop?
The SS.
Oh,
I mean, that's protective guard in German is the Schutzstaffel, and that's what the SS is.
We get there.
Entschuldigung, bitte, gnädigen Frau.
Oh, Entschuldigung.
Wow, that's what is that? You're probably the best German speaker here.
That was good.
I just have a good accent.
Unless Nicole is hiding something, you know.
She might be. Excuse me, please, my good lady.
Nice.
Oh, that's interesting.
Nice. It's funny because anytime there's a German audience member, I'll throw out like the Gates or something like that. And so few people know German as just even like a passive language that they are immediately like fans forever. They love it. It's awesome.
Yeah, Germans, like we all know a little bit of Spanish and maybe a little bit of French. And other than Schadenfreude, we don't know much German.
It's a horrible sounding language.
Well, I don't think necessarily so. I think it can depend. Nicole, by the way, you find this discussion engaging?
I do.
Do you really?
The only German that I ever learned was Hundscheiß.
What's that?
Dog shit.
Nice.
I think, unless that's just a total lie.
I mean, sounds right.
I took it in middle school, so I learned Dubischvoll as well, and that means you are gay.
Well, if this conversation, Dubischvoll,
yeah.
Full is gay?
Schvoll.
Schvoll, okay.
So I think it's S-C-H-W-U with an umlaut L.
Without the umlaut, probably means something else.
Probably.
Umlaut? Umlaut or umlaut?
Umlaut are the two
umlaut.
Two
dots.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know, but is it umlaut or umlaut?
I think it's got a T at the end.
With a T. Yeah.
If you're enjoying this discussion, join us next time for the next week. We have an expert in language acquisition.
Now that's a guest, no more.
She's not on the next week.
Well, what's
stop
she
saying
she on?
That.
Well, whenever she's on.
Okay.
The point is, it's coming. It's coming.
Right. It's coming.
Any thoughts on
how
the
come you didn't you didn't even check in on me when we were in the middle of a war? I thought I would at least get like a fucking
well
WhatsApp
look let's message. Face it, how many casualties were there on among Israelis? How many?
I don't know, but
well,
you, I mean,
think you'll find
all,
that there
a
were
lot,
zero
a lot. No, that's not true. There were people in the South that were killed, number one. And that's not the point. You don't just need to check on me to see if I'm alive.
Look, you're being inconsistent. But you have a better chance of dying crossing the street in New York City. And I don't check on you in on you when you're here.
First of all,
I mean, if we're going to look at the statistics, it's like these people on Facebook that check in safe from fucking something that, you know, there was a car accident in L.A. and I'm checking in safe. Motherfucker, I know you're safe.
I also don't care.
Yeah, that's another thing.
That is another thing. You could just text your parents.
But you know, if you have a better chance of if you're over 50, you have a better chance of dying of a heart attack.
Yeah.
But you're not checking in safe from that.
No.
That's sort of what I'm getting at here is that I knew you were okay.
I was freaking out. I was not okay, is my
And
point.
If you weren't okay, I'd assume I'd have heard news.
Well, I'm telling you, I was not okay.
I would have heard something like, hey, Periel can't make it for the next every podcast.
It was terrifying. I'm not kidding. It's really fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad that you are safe.
Thank you.
And you look good.
Thank you.
You look great.
Any thoughts on the breakup, bringing things back to the comedy world? And I don't know if anybody has any thoughts about this, but apparently Pete Davidson, Kim Kardashian, no longer a couple.
I can't believe it.
Apparently their schedules were, I don't know exactly what happened, but they have broken up.
I like the idea of covering pop culture on the podcast. And I would say that the most sort of first of all, I read that Kanye West put on his Instagram that Pete Davidson was, or Skeet Davidson or whatever the hell he calls him, was dead at age 28. And Kim Kardashian became incensed. Because I mean, Kanye was really like her, like,
yeah, Kanye's a wacky dude. Yeah. I mean, I read that Pete had to get like, said he went into therapy or something for,
he probably did. He was like totally fucking harassing them. It was insane. Nobody should be able to behave like that. It's like, grow up. It was horrible. I mean, I don't know Kim or Pete personally, but it seems like a completely,
you know, I think we've discussed this before. What does Pete have that makes so many women go crazy?
A huge, thick dick.
Well, probably, yes.
That is most of it, I think.
But how much? Well, so how important is that?
He's young. He's funny. He is cool. He's very cool in the way he presents himself. He just has a thing that I think women are attracted to. Kind of a nonchalantness that
kind of like that character that he does on SNL. That, what's his name, Chad or something?
I think so. Yeah,
that guy goes, okay, okay. You know, that character.
Yeah, I think less is more sort of thing, you know, and people, women especially, love broken people. They love to try to fix things. And they despite, you know, whatever he's got going on, they'll always try to put that person together.
And I suppose once he got Ariana Grande or whoever,
he's immediately jumped levels.
He jumped so many levels.
He's going to need trauma therapy to try to get back with a normal person.
Well, I don't know that he's going to be getting back with a normal person.
No.
I think he's going to continue doing what he's doing. Nicole, do you have any thoughts on that? And again, I know, Nicole, I hate to press upon you because I know you prefer to be quiet behind your screens, but you're a young woman, single, or not single, but not married. Do you have any thoughts on Pete Davidson, what his appeal might be?
I think, like, completely what Mike said is correct. But it's, you know, it's not for me.
You don't like big dicks?
Yeah, for sure. But the rest of it, not really. But he is a sweet person. It's just like, you know, I think it's just like the hot girl seal of approval. And now everybody.
Now, once he got Ariana, then he was sort of approved. And now everybody wants to know how did he get Ariana? What's he got? And so I want to.
Yes. And I think that, like, people think that it's unique to think that he's hot.
Yeah. I would also love to just see him like wrist deep in Oprah next. I wouldn't put it past him.
But
yeah.
I think that the answer that you're looking for is that.
And he should do that.
What the French call a je ne sais quoi.
Right. Okay. But that doesn't get us anywhere.
Well, I mean.
That literally means I don't know what.
No, it means that like a certain something
that you can't put your finger on.
You can't articulate.
But I'm trying to put my finger on it.
But you can't. I mean, there's not like a reason. Like, lots of guys have big dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you were being serious, Mike, or do you think a big dick is really that important?
I think that's definitely part of it. I mean, that doesn't hurt in terms of rumor. First of all, Kim got divorced and was immediately like, yeah, I want to get filled up. Who am I going to look to? And then she was, oh, that's right, that little skinny kid on SNL.
He's not really that thin. He's pretty in good shape. I mean,
he's in awful shape. He looks like an emaciated. Like, well, I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'd fuck him, but I'm just saying he's not like jacked.
No, but he's in good shape. He's not jacked. But
he's got human tarantula body. He's very long.
Which I think women like a lanky guy.
Yeah.
And it's certainly better than dad bod, I think.
That's absolutely true. Although some women really like
some women
that
like
well.
Dad bod. Yeah. Too, so,
they like to knead the stomach like a cat with a soft blanket.
Oh,
I'll tell you, I mean, of all people, now Pete's one of those guys that I knew before. You know, there's several people that I knew before they were anything. Kevin Hart, Amy Schumer, Pete Davidson is one of them. And I'll tell you, he would have been, I just, of all the people that I would have never predicted, he's at the top of my list of people. I would really never have, like Kevin Hart.
In terms of being successful?
In terms of being where they are.
Yeah.
Now,
I saw that coming.
You know, the truth is you can't really predict any of it.
Yeah.
But I don't believe you can predict it. Noam always says he saw Jon Stewart and he knew that Jon. I said, no, you didn't know. You didn't know. You didn't know. Maybe you thought, and you probably thought that about 10 other people that you forgot about that didn't go anywhere. I think very few people are predictable. But I was like, of those that did succeed, if I had to make a list of who's the most likely, Pete would not have been very high on that list.
He would have made mine. I started with Pete. So I kind of saw the early trajectory and people being interested in him from a young age. Also, his story, as tragic as it is a perfectly packageable story to sell. It's the most New York story of all time.
Agreed.
So it makes sense that he's on the most New York comedy show and has since risen to fame because he's the face of a generation too.
Which you can predict. You brought this up. You said people were interested in him, and that's something that you can see that you can see. If people, you know, there's certain comics that very quickly attract interest.
I'll tell you something.
And that you can see. And that was the case with Jon Stewart. That was the case with Zach Galifianakis.
Che, too. People really love
Che. As far as just somebody that's so funny that they're going to make it, I just think there's a lot of very funny people. And some of them, some of them don't.
It's not just funny. I think that what Mike's saying is really true. There's a real vulnerability about Pete that I think is very compelling. You know,
not just to women, but to
yeah, in general,
as an artist, as a comic.
This is the generation of sad boys, and Pete's a public sad boy. So it helps to have somebody of his prominence out there talking about being sad. People relate to that.
And also his struggles with mental illness. He's been so open about those. I think it's a lot of things. And I think what you're saying about New York is super true.
But also, what he got on SNL. Now, a lot of people get on SNL and you don't hear from them.
Yeah.
But Pete got on SNL, and in part because I think of his relationships with women, he became famous, not just for what he was doing on SNL, but because he dated Ariana. So all that contributed.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely helped out. That's for sure.
Well, dating Ariana, I think, pushed him into the stratosphere of fame, right?
Yeah, it must be a little bit weird from a comedian's perspective. And granted, I don't know how much he's performing or touring, but to be famous for, obviously he's on SNL, that's a certain level of fame. But then he gets elevated by Ariana and Kim Kardashian. So technically, some of their fans, a lot of their fans, are then going to come and see him live. So he basically has to perform for 14-year-old girls sometimes.
Well, is that what happened? I mean, is that what happened when he went on the road?
I don't know. But that's what I'm.
Yeah, I wonder. You know, yeah. I don't know. But I think you're quite right as to where does he go from here? And the answer is Oprah. I believe you're correct.
Yeah. Or Michelle Obama.
I was just going to say Michelle Obama.
Obama's.
And Barack finds him in bed together.
That would be the best.
And then Barack starts coming at him like Kanye style.
Barack is just disheveled, ripping cigs, just furious.
Barack is tweeting about Pete. That would take it to another level. But
I mean, Kanye West wrote a song about him.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, it kind of feels hard to comprehend what that must feel like because it feels like such a ridiculous joke from the outside. But totally. I'm assuming having that much attention on you and all that negative light and certainly fans of Kanye coming after you in probably pretty violent verbal ways, that's got to be real weird, but it is objectively funny from the outside.
Well, social media bullying is obviously a thing, and it's obviously
It's horrible.
You know, a horrible
Kanye's
thing.
So aggressive too,
especially when your fans, if Kanye's fans are coming at Pete as well, then it can become overwhelming. And
I bet
that's what happened.
That's what's happening.
I bet he gets.
But I think I would imagine his fans know that he's like they got to even know that Kanye's out of line here.
No, I mean, you know, everybody has some pretty intense fans. You know, it depends. And Kanye has a lot of fans. So that means more of them are probably mentally unwell people that are willing to do his bidding. There's, you know, there's a lot of that.
I mean, Dave Chappelle even got on stage at the Cellar and was just like, I told Kanye to, you know, or somebody spoke to Kanye about like chilling out or something. And he was like, there was nothing I could do. You know, he's going to stop when he's going to stop.
That's so weird. That's got to be so weird.
It's like, dude, you have four kids at home. Like, what are you doing?
I mean, he's when he goes home, he doesn't see any of those kids. He's on a ranch in Wyoming. He's like, he's seen his kids like four times. He forgets their names.
Oh, I hope not.
Speaking of kids, I mean, it's as good a segue as I'm going to come up with. Sorry. Mike Cannon, in his intro, said that one of his most important roles is that of a father.
Yeah, I got one kid, one three-year-old son.
What's his name?
Crew. He was named after a 1986 BMX biking movie, Rad.
Oh, okay, it's a movie that not a whole lot of people saw.
No, I bet not. But the people that have seen it will remember that I like it forever. Like, it is a communal thing. If you like that movie, it's a very tight-knit group of people.
It's like a cult thing.
Yeah, a little bit.
And you're a young guy now.
37.
I guess that's not that young, but it seems young.
Yeah.
But so you had the baby at 34. I mean, right. And how long have you been married?
That's a great question. 2016, I think. So 6 years, it'll be 6 years in September.
I mean, I asked the same question. We had Mike Feeney on, and he's like, you know, he's young, a little bit younger than you, but in that area, and he's married. And we asked him why did he, you know, a lot of comics, I suppose, they feel like, well, if they ever get famous, then there's going to be a festival of vagina.
Sure. I've had my festival.
And so you're saying you've already had your festival.
It was a real fire fest, but I definitely, you know, I've had my fun, and, who knows? If I get famous, maybe my wife and I will work out something open. But in the meantime, it seems like she's the only person I would marry. I'm an anti-marriage guy deep down. I think the institution itself is limiting and dog shit. But for the most part, she is the only person that she's the only person that I would make that commitment for.
Where'd you meet her?
I met her on the blacktop where we lined up to get on our bus when we were 10 years old. Yeah, on the black elementary school.
Yeah, blacktop's a word that I haven't used probably since elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's sort of like a kid word, isn't it?
I think so. You don't see many blacktop basketball courts anymore. They're all made out of almost like the tennis court
material. But I would call it asphalt nowadays. Yeah. But I remember as a kid, I remember using the term blacktop. Now, so either that was a term that's fallen out of fashion, or it's a term that is mostly associated with like childhood.
It might be. Yeah, I guess so. I don't.
What is wrong with you? Who gives a shit? He's known his wife since he was 10. That's amazing.
Some of us are interested in words and the origin of language and the evolution of language. Okay. As we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And they find this interesting.
They've been together.
And if you don't, that's fine. You can just sit back and you can just sit back and be quiet.
At this point in my life, when I was 10 years old and I met my wife, I believe I owned a pair of British Knight blacktop sneakers. Weirdly enough.
That was the name of the
sneaker. It was British Knight's blacktop.
Did you, as a child, did you hear the term blacktop ever, Nicole?
Yeah, definitely.
And in adulthood, do you still use it?
No, I haven't heard.
So it might be a kid term. I don't know. Anyway, you met her on the blacktop.
Sure did. She was wearing a Charlotte's Hornet starter jacket.
This was in what part of the country?
Rockland County, New York, right outside the city.
So you knew her as a child.
Yeah. And then so I met her in fifth grade. We quote unquote dated. We were a couple, you know,
in fifth grade,
in elementary school, meaning we hugged and said hello to each other.
There was no nudity.
Eye contact. No nudity, not yet. And then sixth grade, she actually moved into the house next door to me, and we lived next door to each other. Yeah, for a long time.
This is some Jane Austen shit.
Yeah.
I love this story so much.
We've each dated other people, so it's not psychotic.
When did you first really start dating?
So our longest tenure date, we dated, you know, and in middle
real
school
dating,
terms, like we kissed in seventh grade and we dated for like 8 months of the school year. And then we dated again in eighth grade, dated again in ninth and 10th. We had sex in 10th grade. So I suppose that's when things got
really bizarre to have sex with someone you knew as it. Would you say eight years old?
I can still freshly remember her 15-year-old vagina.
Oh, my God.
I'll be darned. But we're not going to get into that.
I mean, it's my memory. Yeah.
And you're entitled to it.
Yeah, that's right. It's also my child dick. Yeah.
But you're not entitled to be turned on by it.
No, I didn't tell. I didn't say if I was.
And to jerk off to that memory, that would be.
No,
I mean,
any time it passes in my head, I kick it out. And
that
say,
is
not today.
But I that is just. Morals. But you met it with how old did you say? Eight.
Ten.
And that is just really, really weird. I don't think I've ever heard of such a thing.
Yeah.
To be married to somebody you knew.
We're lucky. She's cool as shit, man. We really get along still. We have sex a lot still, which is great. And we're good parents together. We're a good team. We also, part of why we got along so well growing up, she's a really excellent basketball player and I was a good basketball player growing up. So her, myself, and my friend Timmy, we lived in like basically a three-house triangle and we would hang out every single day and we would hoop hard and we beat the shit out of her on the basketball court and really made her work for it. And she was awesome in high school because of it. I'm going to take credit.
Now that's an interesting story. Do you bring that to the stage at all? There's no. Got to be some jokes in there.
I mean, I've had like my first hour is a lot of like about how we met and stuff like that. And then it's since progressed and I talk about the current stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty wild.
I'd imagine there's got to be some jokes in the fact that you are married to a woman you knew and as a tenure that you dated in fifth grade.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do have a new one. I watched the movie Titanic on mushrooms and it reminded me that was like my first date with my wife is going to see the movie Titanic in the movie theater.
And that was 1997.
I believe it was. Yeah. Yeah. That's something. That's why Kate Winslet means a lot to me. So by proxy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That recall was impressive too, Dan, that you knew in 1997.
I think, well, I could be wrong, but
I think you're right.
I think I'm correct. I'm good with dates.
Yeah. And also Top Gun Maverick just unseated Titanic as the seventh largest grossing domestic movie ever.
Wow.
And I think deservedly so. That movie was a lot of fun.
It was awesome.
I mean, Titanic was good. You know, the thing about Titanic is I thought the story of Titanic is such an incredible story anyway, that, you know, once they start fictionalizing it, it seemed to be a little cheesy to me. I mean, I guess Maverick is cheesy, but you expect that. But Titanic is such an unbelievable story.
Yeah. I really like Billy Zane, though, man. His performance in that movie, like, breathes life into me. I wish I could be that rich, pompous, and just as big of a douche as he was. It feels freeing. It looks freeing, you know?
Well, he was a good character.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And he's done.
He was not sympathetic.
But not much since then, either.
He's like, all right, I've made my point.
Yeah, yeah.
There was one particular scene where if I had a gun, I might have shot the screen where the preacher or whatever he is, he's saying, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And DiCaprio says, hey, can you walk a little faster through that valley of the shadow of death? Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
And it's like, come on, man.
You didn't like that?
No, it was stupid.
You thought he was disrespecting.
I thought it was just ridiculous. I thought they probably paid a guy $100,000, like some script doctor to punch that. Probably, you know, it was probably punched it up. They paid him. And it's like, we need some laughs in here.
Yeah.
You know, there's no laughs in this thing. So they just seem ridiculous. And I mean, I don't know. I thought it was silly. But again,
there's a lot of silliness to that.
Again, the Titanic story is such an incredible.
Yeah.
Unbelievable story that it's almost like you can't outdo the actual story.
Yeah.
You're trying to improve upon what's already like the greatest story ever.
It's also weird that they spend about 3 hours forcing you to empathize with this woman in Rose. And then the last hour, basically, or not the last hour, but the last bit kind of like makes her wholly unlikable. Like, as her older self, she is the worst version, worst human being of all time. She dies on the ship. Before she does so, she throws a priceless jewelry into the ocean. Her fucking daughter's on the ship with her. She could have easily, like, enjoyed that financial windfall. Yeah. She dies on the ship next to pictures.
And also,
only her. The pictures are
her. Yeah, didn't she have another husband?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she completely forgot about him.
Precisely. And then she met up with Leo in heaven.
And the husband's in heaven. Like, hey, what the fuck?
Yeah. Where's my lady?
You know? Yeah. So I agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, also some of the lines that are real, like, when Guggenheim says that gets into a tuxedo to go down with the ship and says, we're prepared to go down like gentlemen. I knew that line anyway, 'cause that's like a very famous line that he had. And somehow in the movie, it didn't, in my head, it was already like so much better.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, again, when you're trying to recreate something that's kind of mythic, it would be like having a scene where Lincoln is doing the Gettysburg Address, which I don't know, did he do
in the movie Lincoln?
I've never seen it.
No,
I'm not sure if he did, but it's like, it's hard to, it wouldn't outdo what's in my head of Lincoln doing, anyway, you get the idea. Or maybe you don't get the idea because I didn't explain it well.
I thought it was beautifully put.
But anyway, Maverick, if Maverick is indeed the number one grossing movie, I say deservedly so. That thing was
super fun.
So much fun. Was it art? Was it cinematic?
Yes. Yes, it was. I mean, in terms of stunts by a 60-year-old man, has there ever been a more impressive thing? I was joking, and I'm sure other people have this take, but if there was a Scientology booth outside of my movie theater, I would have been.
Yeah, if it's good enough for.
Yeah,
if it's good enough for Tom.
Look at him. In Mission Impossible, he's leaping off the top of fucking skyscrapers, snapping his leg, and then coming back 6 months later to redo the stunt. The guy is out of his mind, just hyper focused, and I'm just completely on board with his issues.
Can I voice an unpopular opinion here?
Yeah.
Well,
I cannot. Dan,
huh?
I cannot stand Tom Cruise. Totally, I can't even look at him.
Well, you are entitled to that opinion, but yep. Now you have to defend it briefly because we're almost out of time.
I mean, I think that maybe to present the other side of what Mike is suggesting, yeah. I find him so just. I think he's like a psycho.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. Yeah. Yes, yes.
But
that's
not,
what I was just saying.
But not in a sexy way. I mean, I think the whole Scientology.
Well, no one's asking you to be attracted to him. We're asking you to enjoy the action.
No, I think he's, it's like, I look at him and I think he's creepy. Like, I think he's like scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has like no soul.
Well, I don't know if he has a soul or he doesn't.
He does have a very steely focus. Like, you can't tell if he's actually warm blooded. But I totally understand that the, you know, Scientology in and of itself is, you know, they certainly got their blemishes. I won't get into it because my law team is not strong. But yeah, otherwise, I just like the movies he makes.
But that movie was such a good time. So much fun.
I didn't see it.
That's an American movie. That's the kind of movies we make in this country.
Right. Nondescript enemy.
Just crazy. Yeah. The enemy, you didn't know who it was.
They had somehow a fucking desert and snow in the same country. Pretty cool.
But by the way, I watched Boogie Nights again recently on Netflix.
I've only seen the last scene. Just kidding.
Oh, yeah. That one. that's one of my favorites.
Boogie Nights? I haven't seen that. I'll watch it.
It's the best. It's got it's got my top three. I don't know which one is one, two, or three, but it's got a top three cocaine scene in a movie for me, and that's when they go to rob the dude with the open probe.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, you mean Alfred Molina?
Yes, and he's throwing the M80s, and he's got the little, like, boy kind of running
around.
I
don't mean to overanalyze it. I don't think they were M80s. I think they were just firecrackers.
Firecrackers.
I don't think they were M80s, but...
That would be fair.
I don't think anybody would light an M80 in the house.
Somebody on a massive amount of
cocaine. Yeah, maybe he would.
But I will say, as somebody who has, you know, gotten past that part of my life, but has done a fair amount of cocaine, That one scene where just they settle in on Mark Wahlberg's eyes and hold it on his long ass stare for a solid 90 uninterrupted seconds. That is the most accurate cocaine portrayal I've ever seen in film.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, my experience with cocaine is far more limited than yours. So I can't speak to that directly, but that was obviously a great scene. And the actor that played, you know, the guy that got shot, that was like,
Thomas
no, we're
Jane.
Yo, that was an amazing performance. That was an absolutely insane performance.
Yeah.
And he's done, I guess, other things since.
He was in Hung. He did Punisher, which is also that's kind of an underrated good comic book movie. John Travolta, speaking of Scientology, kind of comes in and shits the bed as the villain. But other than that, that movie's pretty damn good.
Just to put a bow on this whole episode, Travolta.
Oh, and Olivia Newton-John. Oh, look at us.
Yeah, Travolta. And by the way, I got nothing bad to say about Travolta. I really like that guy. I think he's a good dude. Of course, I don't know that for sure. But he did had some kind words to say about Olivia Newton-John, saying that he will. I didn't know they were such good friends, you know, since Grease. But apparently they are. Or were. And said that I'll always be your Danny and your John or something like that. Danny being his character, of course, in the movie Grease.
Mm-hmm.
We'll end there, I suppose. Once again, my huge mistake.
Yeah, Mike Cannon's huge mistake out. That's August 17th, 9 p.m. It starts streaming on youtube.com/Mike Cannon Comedy. It will then be up and available forever. And my hour, White Privilege Homeless, that I released this past May is up there. My special before that, Mike Life Begins, is up there. Everything. I got a ton of stuff up on YouTube, and we have a podcast on this very network called Here's the Scenario.
And I know that you work with Nicole very closely.
She directed and edited Mike Cannon's Huge Mistake, this special. She's an insanely talented filmmaker and is going to do huge.
Well, things. I've always said good things about Nicole. I call her the Sultan of the soundboard, I think, or some words to that effect.
The diva of decibels.
The diva of decibels. That's what I call her. But apparently sound is not her only game.
No, she's also sight.
Video is also her thing as well. As long as we're going to plug my book, Iris Spiro Before COVID, a novel, is available on Amazon. And by the way, if you have Kindle, there's free chapters available as a free sample. Perry L's books, On My Knees, as well as The Only Bush I Trust Is My Own, also available on Amazon. And also free samples, I assume, are available on Kindle, because that's what they do. Perry, we'll see you back in the United States when?
In the beginning of September.
Okay, so it'll be a few weeks. Anyway, stay safe in Israel.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. And we'll see you next time on Live from the Table. Bye-bye.
Stay safe, Perry.
Bye-bye.
Well, then P.